Holy God in heaven, thank you for bringing us here tonight. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your care and your grace and the daily pouring out of all your gifts that we need, both for the inward man and for the outward man. We thank you for it all. We praise you and we glorify you. And thank you for giving us your word and for telling us about the history of the world in the past, especially of Israel, because we know that you want us to learn from it and that we might avoid the sins and that we might imitate the good. In the name of Jesus we pray. Amen. Alrighty, so we've already looked at chapter 2, 1 Kings 13 through 25, about the execution of Adonijah. So now I want us to look at verses 26 through 27 and the rejection of Abiathar. Okay, and that says, 1 Kings 2, 26, "And to Abiathar, the priest, the king," that's Solomon, "said, go to Anathoth, to your own fields, for you are deserving of death, but I will not put you to death at this time, because you carried the ark of the Lord God before my father David, and because you were afflicted every time my father was afflicted." So Solomon removed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, that he might fulfill the word of the Lord which he spoke concerning the house of Eli at Shiloh. Anathoth was also the home of Jeremiah. It was just north. It was like a suburb of Jerusalem. Now, does anyone remember why Abiathar, what he had done wrong? Why is Solomon saying these words to him?
Well, he was exiled, but I don't know why.
Okay. He sided with Adonijah, okay. And I don't understand that, because he had been loyal to David. Well, as Solomon himself said, he had been so loyal to David that every time David was afflicted, Abiathar was afflicted. And now all of a sudden, Adonijah comes along, and it's goodbye, David. Hello, Adonijah. I don't understand that. But that's what he did. Phil? Joseph? That it almost has to be it. I mean, he knows David's still king, but it must be that he was thinking something like that. You know, David's old, he's about ready to go. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to understand that, but anyways, and there's another thing that he had in his favor. I already mentioned one, that every time David was afflicted, he was afflicted, but there was something else that he did that Solomon commended. He carried the ark. And what is so important about the ark? The ark of God.
Only the Levite priests were supposed to carry
it. Okay. But what was it? What was it for? Okay, so it was in the temple or tabernacle, right? And so it would be God's home in that sense. And okay, you know, you had the, see, what do the cherubim look like? These are supposed to be wings, okay? Here's their bodies. Another set of wings over here. And what was this spot right here called? The mercy seat, exactly. And what was the mercy seat? What was that all about? This is where God came down and the high priest went, you know, with blood, and then, you know, this is where he met with God. And if God wanted to communicate a message to Israel through the high priest, this is one time that he did it. It's, of course, not the only time. Sometimes you only did it through prophets and whatever, but this was at least one. So this is very important. And what was inside the ark?
Tablets of stone.
The what?
Tablets of stone.
Okay, what tablets?
Ten commandments.
The Ten Commandments. Anything else in there? A pot of what? Manna. And what was the other thing? I'm really sorry, but my sinus infection, even with my hearing aids on and turned up full blast, I'm having a hard time hearing. So when you all speak at one time, it's just blah, 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 blah to me. Sorry. Phil?
Aaron's potted staff.
All right, his staff that budded. Okay. So again, this and also on the outside of it, someplace, was what?
Well, no, I was going to answer your question as to why he was in misfavor with Solomon. Down on Sinai, he killed the commanding generals of the army and just murdered them.
Well, that was Joab.
Sure.
Yeah. And we'll come to Joab here in a little bit. We're talking about Abiathar, the high priest.
Well, okay, you're talking about the high priest.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean
that's okay. So, and on the outside, if I remember correctly, there was a copy of the scriptures. And again, you know, only one person once a year would go in there on the Day of Atonement, I believe it was. Okay. So, and the removal of Abiathar also fulfilled something.
Prophecy.
Of what?
Eli's house.
That what would happen?
They would die.
Okay, yeah. And it starts with Eli's sin of not stopping his sons when he should have, and then his sons sinned, and it must be that some more generations sinned, and then finally, you know, Abiathar, what he does. Now we talk about Joab. Here's the execution of Joab, verses 28 through 35.
I see it.
Then news came to Joab, for Joab had defected to Adonijah. Well, news, I'm guessing, about Adonijah and about Abiathar. He's hearing about these things. He sees what's coming down. And he knows what he's done wrong. So, though he had not defected, you know, he had defected to Adonijah, but not to Absalom. So Joab fled to the tabernacle of the Lord and took hold of the horns of the altar. And King Solomon was told, Joab has fled to the tabernacle of the Lord. There he is by the altar. Then Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, go, strike him down. So Benaiah went to the tabernacle of the Lord and said to him, thus says the king, come out. And he said, no, but I will die here. And Benaiah brought back word to the king, saying, thus said Joab, and thus he answered me. Then the king said to him, do as he has said, and strike him down and bury him, that you may take away from me and from the house of my father the innocent blood which Joab shed. So the Lord will return his blood on his own head because he struck down two men more righteous and better than he and killed them with the sword. Abner the son of Ner, the commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa the son of Jether, the commander of the army of Judah, though my father did not know it. And who else did he kill? That he was actually told by the king, David, not to kill. Absalom, all right. 33. Their blood, therefore, return upon the head of Joab and upon the head of his descendants forever. But upon David and his descendants, upon his house and his throne, there shall be peace forever from the Lord. So Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, went up and struck and killed him, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. The king put Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, in his place with the army, and the king put Zadok, the priest, in the place of Abiathar. Now this Benaiah, he was quite a man. Do you remember what the Bible says about some of his exploits as a mighty man of David? Look at 2 Samuel 23. I don't know why, but maybe it's just because it's my personality or something, but this is one of my favorite chapters in the Bible. It starts off with one of David's last psalms, verses 1 through 7, and then it tells you about his mighty men. And I just love reading about these guys. I guess because it's not a fictional movie that I'm seeing, and where stuntmen are being used and it's fake. This is real. Have you ever you had to read this chapter this week, okay? And just see what these guys did. It's unbelievable. But anyways, look at verse 20. Benaiah was the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man from Kabzeel, who had done many deeds. He had killed two lion-like heroes of Moab. Why do you think the Bible calls them lion-like? Okay, it could be. And I would guess also that they were... I mean, what do you think about a lion?
Strong.
Just a pussycat?
Yeah, strong.
Strong, they're ferocious. They are fearless. From what does a lion run? Maybe you've seen this video. I've seen a video on the internet where some guys are hunting in Africa, and they've seen a lion, a male, and they shot at him, and I don't know if they hit him or not, but he saw where the bullet came from, and he took off after them. And here, I mean, this lion, probably, you know, what, 600 pounds or something? And just as it gets right to where Dave is, to one the shooter, the guy shoots again and I think hits him, but still the lion just keeps running and turns around and comes back for more. You know, Proverbs chapter 30 mentions about the lion. It doesn't say he's king of beasts, but it comes pretty close to saying that. You know, like how we refer to him. So anyways, Benaiah had killed two men who were like that. And here's one I love. He had also gone down and killed an actual lion in the midst of a pit on a snowy day. Have you ever been in the wild where you could see a lion, mountain lion in this area? You know, I have, and I'll never forget. It almost seems like I've told you about this, but when you go up Highway 97 over in Klamath County, you know, here's Upper Klamath Lake over here, and then over here there's this big, huge cliff. Well, there's a road you can take, and then you come around this way and you get on top of it. Well, one time Carrie and I had parked our car right here and then got out with our lunch and came over here and hiked up this mountain and sat right across from our car. And Carrie says, "Look at that dog running over there." And I'm thinking, you know, dogs, their tails, if it's a long one, they kind of go down like that. This one was long, and the tip was as big as the part where it was attached to the body. And when he got alongside our car, he was about half the size of it. And I'm thinking, that's no dog, that's a lion. And do I even have a pocket knife on me? You know, and just, I'm thinking, man, don't, I hope he doesn't smell our food or something, you know. That's why when I read this here, I'm thinking, why would you go down into a pit? Why can't you get some bamboo and make a spear out of it and hit the guy, you know? And what's with the problem with snow? Yeah, your footing. And he's got four-wheel drive with studded tires, you know. But he did it. And that's not it. That's not all. And he killed an Egyptian, a spectacular man. And it's either one of the kings or the chronicles that says this man was actually 7.5 feet tall. Not Goliath, but would you want to fight somebody who's 6'5"? How about 7'6"? The Egyptian had a spear in his hand, so he went down to him with a staff, wrested the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and killed him with his own spear. Wow. Okay, and I got kind of carried away with that, didn't I? Okay, so why do you think Joab joined Adonijah but not Absalom? This is another one that just baffles me. And maybe it's the same as what Phil was saying earlier about David's obviously old. His uncle David is old. You know, he's not doing well. And here's a son of David now becoming the king. He thinks this is his opportunity. It's hard for me to explain that. Why did he go into the tabernacle and hang on to the horns of the altar? So you mean so they couldn't take him from there and take him to another place to execute him? Okay, Phil? Joseph?
Dictionary said he stored himself on the mercy of God.
Okay.
And to take sanctuary from man's vengeance.
But it's interesting, though, that he actually said, though, that he was willing to die there, didn't he? Thanks. So, see, I'm still in 2 Samuel. Sorry. And I also wonder too if he just thought, well, they won't kill me here. This is where animal sacrifices are supposed to be. But you know, that didn't stop Solomon. This man needed his cousin. These guys are cousins. It needed to be removed from the earth.
Well, if they touched him, is what he's thinking, then they would touch the altar also.
Okay. And they would be in violation of the law, okay? All right, the next one, 36 through 46, the execution of Shimei. Or how would you pronounce that? Shimei? Then the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, "Build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there and do not go out from there anywhere. For it shall be on the day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain you shall surely die, your blood shall be on your own head." That sounds easy enough, doesn't it? And Shimei said to the king, "The saying is good." So he agrees to it. "As my lord the king has said, so your servant will do." So Shimei dwelt in Jerusalem many days. Now it happened at the end of 3 years that two slaves of Shimei ran away to Achish, the son of Maachah, king of Gath, that's a Philistine, and they told Shimei, saying, "Look, your slaves are in Gath." That's where Goliath was from. So Shimei arose, saddled his donkey, and went to Achish at Gath to seek his slaves, and he should have stayed there. And Shimei went and brought his slaves from Gath, and Solomon was told that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and had come back. Then the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, "Did I not make you swear by the Lord and warn you, saying, know for certain that on the day you go out and travel anywhere, you shall surely die? And you said to me, 'The word I have heard is good.' Why then have you not kept the oath of the Lord and the commandment that I gave you?" The king said, moreover, to Shimei, I'm wondering if he waited. Now he asked a question. And Shimei is speechless. So the king says some more. "You know, as your heart acknowledges, all the wickedness that you did to my father David, therefore the Lord will return your wickedness on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever." So the king commanded Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck him down, and he died. Thus the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. 2 Samuel 16 shows the sin of Shimei. If you remember, as David is fleeing from his son Absalom, This guy comes out and starts cursing David, throwing rocks at him, throwing dust at him, you know, and just basically saying, you're getting what you deserve. And one of David's men, you know, said, let me go and take his head off. And David said, no. But now he's left it into the hands of his son to take care of it. And his son did. So my question is why did this man violate this agreement that he had with Solomon? Hi, Andrea.
I think it's been 3 years and he was just feeling a little comfortable.
Okay.
That makes me think of someone that's on parole or something for a while and is doing good and then he breaks it and it's just like it's been a while and he thinks nobody's watching.
Okay. So he's maybe just feeling kind of comfortable and overconfident, obviously, Dave.
Stirred up, he probably thought it had died down. He didn't realize that Solomon didn't give up that easy on him. He was good during the first time, and that was it. He had to live by the rules, or he wasn't going to get it.
Right.
And then there was another thing we talked about, Benaiah, when he killed the killed the guy
about the lion or Joab?
He kept it when he had his son. The guy was going to kill him, but he didn't. When he went up and they said, well, let him, he threw the rocks. They got there, and one of his men, David's men, was going to go kill him. But he saved it and let his son take care of it. It was kind of a blood thing. It was kind of like an Arab.
Yeah.
Stayed in the family. You know,
yeah, and David, I think, wasn't... Well, there was a time when David was into personal vengeance, but I think he had learned. And so he didn't want to just execute Shimei just because, you know, as a personal vengeance thing, but he passed it off onto the God-given authority. You know, and so, yeah, I agree with you there. So the last thing that this chapter says is that these executions established the kingdom of Solomon. How did they do that? Who had told him to do these things? David had. So he's following the instructions of his father. Look at Ecclesiastes 8, verse 11. And Solomon, interestingly, wrote, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. So by him doing what his father told him to do, and he didn't delay, he didn't seem to be looking to do it, but every time, you know, something happened first, and then he moves into action. You know, just I think that people could see this guy's serious, and he's gonna take control. He's gonna lead our nation. He's gonna do the right thing. Phil Joseph again.
It seemed like it's time to clean house.
Yeah.
Because he's going to live in peace.
Yeah, he's cleaning house. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's, yeah. Sometimes the house just needs to be cleaned, doesn't it? Now, I don't know if I followed my handouts. I was looking at my own notes. So, did I? Did I leave anything empty there?
No,
Yeah, I think I dealt with all those things. All right. So now we go into the next chapter, which is probably the most famous chapter about David. I mean, Solomon. And make sure you hang on to these, because I don't think, since I started 1 Kings, I don't think there's been two Wednesdays in a row that I had class. We either had a singing, or I went to Texas, or in this case, we'll have singing again next week. And then we'll have class, and then we'll have VBS. Yeah. So I think that should be enough there. And then after VBS, I go on vacation. And then after that, everything should go well. You know what? When I come back for vacation, we'll have 1 week, and then we'll have the singing again. I can't believe that. Why is that? Sorry about that. And I probably missed one time because I was ill. And I guess one for Bob down there too. If you could pass it on now. Bob, Phil Frisbee. How many Phils we got in this congregation? Phil Friesen should, he'll have one for you there. Okay. Look at the days of Solomon. I just think this is kind of interesting the way the first four verses read. Now Solomon made a treaty with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married Pharaoh's daughter. Then he brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall all around Jerusalem. Meanwhile, the people sacrificed at the high places because there was no house built for the name of the Lord until those days. And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except that he sacrificed and burned incense at the high places. Now the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. Okay, so I don't know what it is about this woman here, but I mean, how many wives and concubines did this man end up having? But this one gets special attention. And there's one other one, unless it's the same one, there's one other one who gets special attention. You know who that is? Actually, we don't know her name, just like we don't know this woman's name. That's the Shulamite. The way she's described there, she doesn't sound like a king's daughter, because she's working out in the fields, unless the king's daughter just wants to do that. But so it's interesting. There's something about these two women that they get mentioned. And how significant is it, how interesting is it, that the Israelites were once slaves to the Egyptians, now here's an Israelite king marrying the daughter of a pharaoh. It's amazing how things turn around, isn't it? Okay, so what are the three building projects that verse 3 mentions? I mean, verse 1. Okay, his house, his home, and the temple, and the wall around Jerusalem. All right. Those are huge building projects. And elsewhere in the scriptures, it tells us how big his home was. And it probably wasn't his only home, but it was huge. It was gigantic. It was bigger than the temple. And of course, it's gone now. And I wondered to myself, why were not his other projects mentioned? Why just these three? There's something in verse 1 that kind of indicates something was not going to happen until these three particular projects were done.
He couldn't marry Pharaoh
Yeah, or didn't want to bring her into Jerusalem until these things are done. And I wondered why. Were they to be a special prize to her? Or, you know, from what we know of the splendor of Egypt, perhaps before he did these projects, just Jerusalem didn't match it. And so he thought he had to do something that created surroundings around her that she was somewhat used to. You know, I don't know, I'm just speculating. And verse 2. Where are the people sacrificing? The high places. And why do you think the high places? Why not in the valleys or under a or somewhere else in a cave or something?
Closer to God.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can figure is they felt like they were closer to God. And if you've ever been hiking or even in a car and you go to the top of a mountain, what is that like? Yeah, it's so awesome, isn't it? I just love it. Verses 3 through 4 mentions Solomon's love for the Lord. And I found at least two ways in which he showed his love for the Lord. Dave?
I have a question about where he sacrificed. He sacrificed over 1,000 sacrifices. Now, is that an act? Was each one of those sacrificed a whole animal?
Yes, I believe so.
You realize, how long it takes to burn up an animal? And you'd have animals spread around the place. It would look like a...
Yeah, it was a busy place. And it had to have been a huge fire. And you know, probably just the whole tribe of Levi's involved in this. Yeah.
They didn't have other guys
to. Right, and it's not like they just killed the animal and then set it on fire. They had to partially butcher it, you know, and there was organs had to be removed and different things done with the body. You know, have you ever watched a professional, what are they called? The guys that come out? Well, the one that comes out and kills your... He's still called a butcher? Okay. Kind of scary, actually. Because I remember we raised a steer one time, and when it came time to butcher him, and I had the guy come out, and with a .22 rifle, he brought down this steer to his knees, just shot him right between the eyes and dropped him, took a knife and slit him open this way. I would have expected this way, but slit him open this way. He rolled over on his side, and I think within an hour, or maybe even half an hour, he had him gutted, you know, and he had this cut off and that cut off, and asked if I wanted the tail, and this and that, and this and that, you know, and everything, and boom, he was out of there. And every few cuts, he would use the steel, you know, to straighten his blade, and I thought, man, I hope he never comes to my house and uses any of my knives. He's going to think they're terrible, you know. But my point is that the Levites were like that. You know, they knew what they were doing, and they worked fast. You know, it was...
Well, they had a lot of practice.
Yes, they did. That's right. Okay, so... How do you think Solomon showed his love for the Lord? Well, I would say this. The second one I found is what Dave just mentioned, that he offered 1,000 burnt offerings. But the first one is mentioned right after it says he loved the Lord.
They burned incense, the high places.
Does it mention incense?
Yeah, verse 3.
Okay, it did. I hadn't noticed that, Diana. I just skipped right over that. Okay, so maybe there's three things then. You'll have to add a third point on your handouts if I even have them there.
Footsteps.
Okay, so he's walking in the statutes of his father David. And obviously, I think there's a couple of thoughts there. This would be things that God had handed down through David. But also, let's do this. I would like some readers, just because I want to get through this. And turn to Proverbs. And I think it would go faster if you read these. Okay, these are all Proverbs. The book of Proverbs. 1, 4, 1. Okay, who would like to read the first one? Okay, Karen Fitzwater. Who would like to read the second one? Tim Braden. And was that you, Diana? You want to do the third one? Diana Friesen. That's not... Someone might think that's Dave Fitzwater, so there we go. Who else? Tracy? TP. Don't TP her house. Michael, you got 15-5. And Dave Fitzwater will do the last one. Okay, go ahead, KF, whoever you are.
My son, hear the instruction of your father and do not forsake the law of your mother.
All right. TB?
Listen, my sons, to a father's instruction. Pay attention to gain understanding.
Diana?
My son, keep your father's command. And do not forsake the law of your mother.
Tracy Renee.
A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to reason.
The mailbox maker dude.
A fool despises his father's instruction, but he who receives correction is prudent.
And Brother Fitzwater.
Listen to your father. Listen to your father who gave you life, and do not despise your mother when she is old.
So, did you notice a common theme in all those passages? All written by Solomon, by the way. What was the common theme?
Family.
Okay, can you... Okay, and which of the two parents did he mention? Father, and mother was mentioned in some of them, but father definitely. And what did he say about the father, your father?
Listen to him,
all right? So that's what David did. And, you know, that's, and obviously God is the one who's moving him to write these things down here.
He also talks about the mother in that first verse also.
Yes, definitely. You know, so it's this basic idea of honoring your parents by listening to them. Does that mean you always are going to agree with them?
No.
No, but we can still listen and disagree. With the exception of my child who's in this class tonight. No, she's very good. Better than I am in listening to my parents. Okay, verse 5. Now imagine you're Solomon, okay? And at Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask, what shall I give you? What would you say to God if he asked you that question?
I want to go to heaven.
You want to go to heaven? Okay. I hadn't thought of that one. I think that's wonderful. What else? What would you say if God said that to you? Karen, I can tell you got something on your lips. $1,000?
Knowledge.
I still didn't understand it.
Lots of knowledge.
Knowledge, $1,000. I don't know how I got that.
Well, I'll take the money
too. See, I couldn't even hear that either. So you guys can... She wants it all. And now go to Mark 10. And I was at the doctor today, so knowing what... I have more instruction for me to take care of my health. Mark 10:46. Now they came to Jericho. As he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great multitude, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the road begging. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Then many warned him to be quiet, but he called out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." So Jesus stood still and commanded him to be called. Then they called the blind man, saying to him, "Be of good cheer, rise, he is calling you." And throwing aside his garment, he rose and came to Jesus. So Jesus answered and said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And then, you know, the blind man says he wants to see. And incidentally, you may want to write in your margins there that he's actually asking to see again. At least the New King James doesn't have that. Maybe your translation does, but he wants to see again. So he had seen before and he lost his sight. So I just wonder, is that something the Lord wants for all of us? He said it to Solomon and he said it to this blind man. Why would you say that?
So, to be more able to study on your own and go places to learn more of God, and plus it may open his eyes more to Christ.
Okay. And go ahead, Phil.
That's what prayer is.
That, Phil. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And that's what prayer is all about.
Do I have that on the handouts or something? Because that's what I have on my notes. Okay. Oh, where am I? Oh, yes. You know. So, what is it that he says to us about prayer? I mean, hasn't he essentially said, "Ask and it will be given to you"? Now, you know, there's conditions on that. What would be the conditions to it? Has to be according to his will. But other than that, it's pretty wide open. And so the question I had for myself was, Don Rule, have you done that? Have you been asking him just as though he appeared to you and said, "What do you want? I'll give it to you." This, and I invite you to think about it too. It's amazing to me that the God of heaven would say that to these little ants living down here on the earth. What is man? You know, Psalm 8, what is man that you visit him? Why do you think, take thought about us? Okay, 6-9. Here's Solomon's answer. And Solomon said, "You have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I'm a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" Why do you think Solomon just didn't come right out and say, "I need an understanding heart to be able to judge your people"? I mean, that's what Bartimaeus did in Mark 10. He didn't give this big old long speech first. He just said, "Lord, I want to see again." What is Solomon doing here?
More or less humbling himself before God.
Okay. I think he is. You know, it's not about me. It's about you and my father David and Israel. And you've blessed my father. He didn't say you've blessed me. You've blessed my father by putting me on his throne. I'm his son. You bless my father by putting his son on his throne to rule over your people. Andrea?
I think he's essentially asking God for mercy in a roundabout way.
Okay, so kind of asking to be in the same situation as his father then? Okay. So I do think that's interesting, the way he talks about David. You what?
Bell has rung.
Oh, has the bell rung? Okay. All right. All right, well, just keep reading that chapter. And next week is our singing, like I say, and then so it'll be for 2 weeks, in 2 weeks. Isn't that right? Isn't next week our singing?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.